Hello, this is Hillel Ticton here, giving the third podcast on the question of the current stage in the Depression. The point I reached was the question of whether it is impossible or whether it is possible for the ruling class to introduce a reform of the system such that they will take capitalism out of the present depression. And if it is possible, what would they do? Or what could they do? Well, the question divides itself into two. Is a temporary solution possible? In other words, is it possible for there to be expenditure of a kind, or a limitation of profits, investment, or whatever, at least for a temporary period, exceptional period, declaring it an exceptional period, and in that way bring the system out of the downturn? Well, in other words, could they repeat what was done in the United States in 1933 under Roosevelt, who ameliorated the depression of that at that point? But we have to note, of course, that not only was it temporary, that he didn't in fact end the depression. But the question is whether then they can ameliorate it or temporarily have considerably low levels of unemployment and a higher standard of living, or a growing standard of living. And of course, the second question is, can they, under capitalism, return to much of what existed after 1945? Can there be a more permanent form of compromise, as it were? Right. Well, firstly, let's note that the period after 1945 remained a period of warfare. It was the Cold War. The United States' expenditure on arms was considerable. Clearly, after 1945, the Korean War, down to 1956, meant that the world was really still in a stage of economic warfare, at least. Now, the effect of the Cold War was, firstly, of course, in terms of the absorption of the surplus value, of the surplus product, into the arms sector, which was, of course, the United States, enormous. Although as a percentage of GDP, it went down over time. But it was also true of other developed countries that they maintained an arms sector. Now, it was nowhere near the importance of the arms sector in the United States, but the United States was the crucial world economic power. Now, the Cold War performed an ideological role as well, of course. That's to say, it was possible to use anti-communism in the United States as a means of control. And it was possible to use it as not only a means of control in terms of ideas, because many people in the United States had actually experienced Stalinism and they knew they didn't want it and they were keen to ensure they didn't get it. But it also ensured that the state could use anti-communism as a means of smashing the resistance of the working class. And they succeeded in doing that. It remained true not just in the United States, it was true of Britain too. So, the function, therefore, of ideology and the function of stability, which pertained to the Cold War, are no longer there. There are a number of other aspects of the Cold War which were also important, but we can leave them out. The fact is, the Cold War is no longer there, and the ideological control of the Cold War is no longer there either. Now, one can say that they continue to use the failure of the Soviet Union, as it is perceived, as a stick to beat any socialist with. But in fact, the Soviet Union doesn't exist, and over time it would no longer be regarded as a socialist failure, but simply as a failure, that Stalinism could not survive, that it was Stalinist and it was not socialist. And that, even if in an inchoate way, already exists. That's to say, there is no obvious Soviet Union standing in front of people. One has to conjure it up, which is already a weakness. But crucially, the economy no longer has the Soviet Union to justify what amounted to a nationalized form of control exercised by the state. Historically, not just in fact in the last 100 years, but over centuries, it has been the role of a central state to deal with warfare, and consequently, insofar as that warfare required the build-up of an war economy, the state itself would do it, and it would be accepted. It's true that today we have outsourcing of the military to a degree, but nonetheless, the military sector has to be paid for, even if it is performed by private enterprise. Not all of it can be performed by private enterprise in any case. So, the question is, can there be a replacement for what amounted to a nationalized sector, which is not war, which is not war goods? I'm saying this because it is difficult to see how it would be possible to run a modern economy with full employment without planning and without the use of profit as the only goal, or as the goal. So, the question then is, would the capitalist class be prepared to see the economy of the world, of the different countries of the world, effectively planned by the population, in the interest of the population? Or alternatively, would they be prepared to see it planned by them themselves? What we're talking about is that there would be deliberate decision to develop the infrastructure to the degree to which it is needed. In a number of capitalist countries, the infrastructure has been allowed to run down. That's true. United States, it's true of Britain, it's true of Germany, etc. Now, in order to build it up, it would be necessary for large-scale investment to go into it. That would lead to a very considerable boost to demand and a considerable rise in employment. It's perfectly possible to do that. But it would have to be planned. And it could not simply be run on the basis of a competitive economy, because most of these things are too big and require most of the inputs are too big, require very considerable resources. And secondly, what we actually have is an economy where there are only a small number of firms which can actually do the job. So, while it wouldn't be necessary to nationalize everything, it would be necessary to effectively place sectors under the state, and it would be necessary to choose particular firms to actually do it, or in many cases it would simply be necessary for the government to nationalize that sector. We've already seen how in Britain there is a considerable degree of discontent with the way the electricity companies are raising their prices. And it's fairly clear that they are dealing with the whole issue in a highly inefficient way. How far an economy could allow that to go on is pretty dubious. So, the question that I'm posing is, would it be possible to have a capitalist economy whose aim is to plan the economy to have full employment? And would it be possible to do that without extensive control over the economy itself? Would it not call in question, in other words, the profit motive? So, whereas in an earlier period, the period after 45, it was possible to go for what I've just said, and to go for the provision of mass housing and a series of other goals. That was in a period when the so-called mixed economy was accepted, and you had large-scale nationalizations. Nationalization, in the case of Britain, of coal, the power companies, gas, transport, etc. So, would they be prepared to go back to that era? Well, to pose the question is really to say that they are not prepared to do it. The question then is, would it necessarily lead to that? It's hard to see how it could not lead to it. No one is posing the goal of full employment, but that is the obvious goal which people want, and which, as a goal, is still there, and which will undoubtedly be pressed further and further. Anyway, the point I'm making is that it's highly unlikely that the capitalist class will actually accept that. Whether somebody like Buffett or Blodgett would accept it, I think, is dubious. Well, okay. Returning to a period, in other words, that existed down to 1970, even at a rather superficial level, which I've actually posed it, doesn't look very likely. So then the question is a temporary solution where aspects of this come into being possible? We've seen the Conservative government discuss and be keen on, effectively. The high-speed rail scheme, running a new railway line to Birmingham and then to Leeds. Whether it'll ever reach Scotland is another question. But it's interesting that they are not proposing to begin it today and to do it quickly. They're proposing only 2017 as the point at which it begins, and sometime in 2030 something it might be finished. Put like that, it's over such a long period that its impact obviously is going to be very limited in terms of the economy itself. And of course, it's not at all clear that it will ever happen. And that, of course, isn't any kind of accident. So, can one imagine them then being forced to introduce new firms, new industrial firms, or finding ways in which there could be new industrial firms? Well, that is officially the viewpoint of the British government anyway, and of course in general terms is what various other countries like America or France would probably say also. That's to say, bring back industry is a slogan. But in fact, they aren't doing much about it. While it's quite likely that more industry returns because it's simply easier to deal with the industry here than in China, when costs have gone up in China and there are more controls. While that might happen up to a point, that's as far as it looks like going. That's to say, only up to a limited level. So, where do we go? Can one imagine a policy which is not de facto austerity? A policy, to repeat, where they, let us say, go on a binge in which they ensure that everyone in the country has their own house or flat. In other words, go for a genuine housing policy where everybody who needs to is rehoused. Well, obviously not. They're still talking of the private sector doing it. Are they? Let's say the Labour Party comes in and officially it's not in favour of austerity. Is it prepared to nationalise the electricity companies? The answer is very clear, and they've said so. No, they're not. Well, if they're not, what then will actually change with the electricity companies? Well, obviously not very much, since they have to make profits. It may be that their profits are excessive, and they are excessive if looked at from the point of view of a socialist, or looked from the point of view of the labour theory of value, or simply looked at in terms of costs themselves, profits, and dividends. It wouldn't be difficult to produce a balance sheet in which costs were much lower. However, given the nature of a capitalist economy, that isn't going to happen. So, it's not very likely, therefore, that much will change in that regard. In that case, we can only see a long period of economic desert. That's the whole implication. The future is behind us. The future is behind us. It is one of a depression. The future in front of us is one of a depression. That is the only thing that one can see. Unless there is a strong working class movement which begins to move the economy. At first, it may be that the ruling class will then make concessions, even the kind of concessions that they don't want, or which I refer to. However, once the process begins with the working class winning victories, it will go on winning victories, and the ruling class will certainly make a stand to try and stop it. The likelihood is that over time, the working class will begin to act. That is the only way forward. Now, when one says that, I think one should be very clear that the worse is not the better. That was the viewpoint of Bakunin and various anarchists. It is simply not true. The French Revolution took place on the upturn, not the downturn. That is where we have to look to. The point at which there is whatever kind of upturn, even if it isn't out of the depression itself, where workers feel that they have a degree of confidence, where they are certain that they can act. It is at that point that one will begin to get the building of a working class movement. And at that point that the ruling class will realize that it will have to concede. And once it begins to concede, the confidence of the working class will grow. And it will feed on itself. No doubt there will be defeats and there will be victories. But that is the way it is bound to go. That is the only way it can go. That doesn't mean to say it will happen tomorrow. And it's not possible to forecast the future. Various things can happen, and what I've said may turn out to be untrue. That's to say, there can be a miracle, perhaps, but it would have to be a miracle where the ruling class does understand that it has to make concessions, and that the concessions themselves lead under working class pressure to further concessions. That is possible, though I do think that would be a miracle. But it is, of course, possible. Anyway, this is the final point, and that is that the only thing that we can do is try and bring the day when the working class is able to act forward. The depression is with us. It doesn't mean to say that capitalism automatically comes to an end. It doesn't. Or that things will get worse, worse, and still worse. That isn't true either. It's simply the case that we're in a depression, the ruling class doesn't know its own way out of it, it doesn't actually have a way out of it, which doesn't lead to it losing control. It's not going to take that way forward. On the contrary, the working class itself has to form itself into a movement and party or parties in order to change society to what it needs, a socialist society. Thank you.